Welcome to the Surviving Grief Podcast, hosted by our grief ministry leaders at Crossroads Church. We'll be sitting down with friends as they share their powerful stories of loss and healing, and we'll hear from grief professionals and other wise people with useful tools for our own time of grief. If you're supporting someone who's grieving, you'll learn how to comfort them and walk with them on their own path to healing. Let's join the conversation.
All right, guys, welcome back to Surviving Grief. You're on with Megs and Kelly. Both of us help with bereavement and healing and those who have lost. Kelly and I have each experienced deep loss, and our goal is to help you navigate specifically the holiday season. So I lost my sister, Susanna, about 7 years ago, and I also went through a second trimester miscarriage about 3 years ago. And Kelly, how about for you?
I lost my husband about 7 years ago and recently been processing some very old stuck grief over the loss of my father 35 years ago and the impact on our family and me personally.
And so both Kelly and I have worked closely with, gosh, I feel like hundreds of people in a combination of both one-on-one and grief groups over the years. And so today we want to just open up the conversation to talk about the messy business of the holidays when you're grieving.
Yeah.
Specifically, you know, new grief, it can feel unbelievably overwhelming. And yet, even if it's your 10th Christmas or your 10th Thanksgiving, there's no statute of limitations on what pain feels like, how it shows up in our day-to-day when we're grieving. And so that's something that we want to tackle is just, what can you expect? How can you form a plan? Because the more that we can add tools to your toolbox on what to expect, it may not lessen the pain, but it will lessen the surprise that can really show up and disorient us. So before we hop into actionable items, because that's the goal today, right? So we want to give you strategies on what to expect, how to combat, you know, some of the grief attacks that might pop up, and also just tools to kind of help you move forward, how to better communicate with the people around you, how to maybe not make a plan, right? That can be a plan in and of itself, is just knowing that you're going to change traditions. And so let's kind of first start with, what was your very first holiday season like after you lost your husband, Tom?
Well, it was lonely. It was small. It was just my daughter and I in our home. And a lot of the things that we used to do, we didn't do. We were both very bewildered. Tom had been sick for a while, and his loss was very tragic, and there were just a lot of extenuating circumstances. So we decided to do everything differently. We put the tree in a different Christmas tree in a different location. We did things together that we didn't do because he was sick and we couldn't do holiday and lights or other local events that were really beautiful. So we made a point of doing those. While the grief was disturbing, it was a sweet time for my daughter and I to kind of regain some time in our relationship that had been lost when Tom was sick. So just taking a different approach and just thinking, okay, I know we used to do it this way and we did it that way for a while, but now it's the two of us, kid, so we've got some options. So let's look at how we want to do things and who we want to spend time with that maybe we didn't get to for the last couple of years. So just taking a different approach.
And so if you are in brand new grief, I would also direct you to some of our earlier episodes where we talk about what to expect, how to better identify your feelings. Because so many times grief just feels like this umbrella and it's this huge emotion that we can't wrap our arms around because there's just so many emotions undulating left and right of you know, this pendulum that's swinging of you're feeling all the things all the time. You might even feel like a little out of control and like you just are having a hard time connecting with those around you. Maybe they're grieving as well. And so if this is your first role on this on this podcast, I encourage you to kind of look back to some of the previous ones to just better understand, what does grief look like for you, both physically, emotionally, spiritually? Because the better that you can discern what's happening, what stage that you're in, and how it's manifesting in your day-to-day life, the better you can just be equipped to move forward. We talk about grieving forward and what that looks like. And a lot of times it has to do with just facing the emotions and acknowledging out loud, this is where I'm at. And so when you're looking at how to progress in making a plan for the holidays, I think that's a really important stage, is understanding where are you, right? What are you feeling? Because if you're in early grief, you might still be in that heavy fatigue phase where you're not even getting out of bed. The idea of, you know, going to the mailbox or the grocery store, that's a lot. And so you, just the idea of planning a Thanksgiving or having to show up somewhere for a Christmas or a Hanukkah party, like that's just, it's too much and you can't even go there. So first things first, I think we got to kind of wrap our arms around where you at today.
Yep. Where are you? And if you think about how stressful the holidays are under normal circumstances, I think when you mentioned the word out of control, that can be definitely a watch out. Because even the most hardy of us in the best of times feel an enormous amount of stress during the regular holiday season. So being prepared to be kind to yourself, you have a get out of jail free card. If you need to say no to a lot of things. And there's nothing wrong with that. Just giving yourself the freedom to acknowledge how you feel and just say, I can't. I'm sorry. I can't. And I think what you'll find is that people are incredibly graceful. I wish we could all be more graceful about the things that we can't do in the holidays during normal circumstances. But certainly when somebody has suffered a loss, that's a time to just give incredible amounts of grace and just, and to yourself first. And realize, like looking ahead, as Meg said, and just saying, okay, what's the plan? What does my family typically do? Am I able to do that? Is my family going to be okay if at the last minute I say, I'm sorry, somebody else is going to have to cover the dessert because I can't bring it because I can't do it. And that's fine.
One thing that comes up over and over as a theme is that each loss, the holidays can look different. If you have lost a spouse versus if you have lost a child or a parent, how you perceive going into the holidays can be very different. And as Kelly said, having grace that there's no right or wrong way to grieve in the holidays. And so that's something that I think that can be really important for us to just speak some life into for you, is that let us validate where you're at right now, that if you don't even want to acknowledge the holidays, go ahead. That's great. Part of the reason that we use the word surviving grief, right, and surviving the holidays in grief, is because sometimes that's physically what it feels like, is you're just trying to tread water, keep your head up, and just let me get through December. Let me get through the new year. I don't want people telling me happy new year. You're just trying to stay in that bubble. And so if that feels good to you, like, let us just say amen on that.
Yep.
And let's just plow through those days. Let's stay busy. You know, if you need to just nap on and off,
yep,
you do what you need to do.
Yep.
And yet, some people feel like that is a disservice, right? If you did have, let's say, a spouse and this was their favorite holiday and you feel this responsibility of, oh my gosh, I have to do something. I have to do it bigger than I normally would for their memory. And so sometimes that can even come along with its own pressures that can be more disorienting. Wherever mm-hmm. your emotional level is right now, expect that to be beefed up as the days get nearer to a Thanksgiving or to the New Year's, or, you know, whatever the holiday is for you that feels like that crescendo of this holiday season, that, you know, you're looking around the landscape and there's the lights and there's the commercials and there's the work parties and everybody is just excited and joyful. And that's not the place that you're in.
Yep.
You see some of those things. Maybe you get angry. Maybe you get mm-hmm. bitter that all these people, maybe they have their spouse or their child, or, and so it just, whatever your emotional retaining wall is right now, expect that to be really challenged in those days and weeks ahead as you navigate grief. I mean, did you have any of those where you kind of had some of these anger outbursts in those early days of grief with holidays?
Absolutely. And I was in a very different financial picture too. The holidays were a time to be more conservative than we would have been in the past because now we have one income. So that's another important conversation to have with your children, If you have had spouse loss and you are in a different financial picture, a lot of times don't think it all the way through. They don't think about all the implications of losing someone. There can be outrageous medical bills in conjunction with a loss. You're going down to one income in many cases. So that is something that you really need to think about in advance. And being conservative is probably the best plan, and just kind of writing it out. The holidays, the first holiday after a big loss, is a good time to just really hunker down and just kind of write it out and not have any extremes in one fashion or another, not financially, not emotionally, not overcommitting to travel, just really sort of keeping in kind of in the middle to just see how it feels and what you are capable of doing. Because again, you do have a lot of the people who love you will understand. They will give you a lot of grace. Kids will understand. They're smart. They've seen what's been going on, and they know, I'm sure, if it's your situation, that things are financially different. And it's a time to come together as a team a lot of times, and just to say, hey, this is how the new normal is. And this year we're just gonna be a little bit more conservative. We're just gonna be a little bit less throwing the gifts around and doing all the things, and we're just going to have it a little bit more quiet holiday this year. And that can actually be more beautiful. And you can really take the time to just kind of hunker down at home and process your emotions, not have to worry that you're going to be out somewhere and be ambushed by emotions, which is a lot of times what can happen.
So many times we stress the communication piece. And you know, for me, after I lost my sister, my family was very close to begin with before the loss. And then after, even more so. Yeah, I've often referred to it as this grief bubble. My sister passed away in mid-September. So by the time the holidays were rolling around, even though at this point I was long distance, my family was in Arizona, I was back here in Ohio, I felt closer than ever and more connected to my family by the time the holidays got here. But for you, if you're in new grief, everyone in your family grieves differently. They grieve a loss differently. And so whether you were a tight, connected community before the loss, or if things were strained, now you add on grief into that, and it can be even tougher to navigate. You know, for so many people, just holidays as is without grief, there is anxiety, there's social anxiety, there's family dynamics, there's friend dynamics, there's just all the things. You know, Kelly and I laugh about this. There's all the things. All the time. And so when you put grief in the mix, you know, I talked about these, just the emotions. As those grief attacks, which a grief attack is something that can sneak up on you, whether you're new grief or a few years removed or 10 years removed, it's a song, it's a moment, it's just something where it comes over you. Sometimes there's crying, sometimes there's anger, but it shows up. It's these volatile emotional moments. And so now you put in other people and how they're perceiving grief, how they're processing grief, and even friends, right? So, you know, they have their own stress with the holidays, and they see you, they know that you're hurting. And do they say something? Do they not say something? Do you want me to bring it up? You know, Kelly seems happy. Yeah. I don't really want to ask how she's doing or not. And so there, you have people that are really walking a tightrope. And so as hard as it can be when we are in an emotionally volatile position to have grace for other people, part of knowing what to expect and having realistic expectations, and part of the reason, you know, we even use the word triggers for some of these things, is really taking the time to think about what are the moments that are going to be hard. Who are the people that I'm around that are going to be hard? For me, after I had a miscarriage, seeing people's baby announcements or their family pictures around the holidays, that was really challenging for me. And so I had to just stay off of social media because that was such a hard thing for me, where it wasn't serving me in any type of healing place in that moment. And so part of setting realistic expectations for yourself in the months kind of that include the holidays is, okay, where are the times that I am most vulnerable to having something arise that's difficult to navigate. And spending time, whether it's writing, whether it's thinking about it, whether it's talking to a friend about it. And so going back to why communication is so key, a lot of people around us, especially if they aren't the ones that are grieving, let's just use friends or coworkers as an example. They want your leadership in how to help. And sometimes that can almost be more frustrating, right? Tell me what you need. Tell me how I can help. And when you're in the throes of grief, I don't know what I need. And so, you know, that can be frustrating, right? Because, or if you're not someone who takes help easily, you may not want to ask for things. But the more that you can communicate beforehand, especially in the context of a holiday, right? If you, like, let's say you've lost your spouse and your kids are asking, Mom, what do you want to do for the holidays, right? It's okay to be transparent because that actually helps the people around us navigate.
It does. It absolutely does, because they're grieving too. They loved, you know, it was their father. It was their brother. It was their, I'll never forget coming over to my sister's house a couple Christmases after we lost Tom. And I saw this ornament on their tree that I had never seen before. And it was a picture of Tom. And it was from my nephew. And it just, like, it was so sweet. And it just, it took me aback. And it reminded me that everyone has lost this person. And it's hard when you're the primary person, the mother of the child, the spouse, but it is good perspective to think about the loss of your loved one from all of the angles of all the people that love them. And as Meg said, giving them some help on how to best love you. How to best serve you? What do you need? A lot of times in our grief support group, there's an exercise where you can write a letter to people that just says, hey, this is where I am as we're coming up to the holidays. This is how I'm feeling. You know, this is how to care for me best. If that's something that you're worried for, ask about him. Let's talk about it. I'm okay talking about it. Just give people some clues and some cues on where you are and what would feel good to you, and letting them know, hey, if I cry, it's okay. The tears are helping me to heal, and it's okay. I think that's one of the most loving things that we can do for ourselves and for other people, as they also are mourning the loss of our loved one. No one teaches you how to grieve, and this is a lesson in grief. This is part of Grief 101, is to help the people around you know how to love you in this, especially during the holidays when emotions are all over the place. And be prepared to make new memories, I think, is important too. If you had a long-standing tradition of we always do this, you know, and you know it's going to be hard because you're not going to be doing the things you've done for 20 years, then maybe thinking ahead of, like, well, what can we do now? What feels right, given how different we are, given that we are going to go on? If you have a young family and you're going to be together for a long time, it's an opportunity to shift that tradition and to incorporate your lost loved one into it, just knowing that it's going to be different. And beautiful things can come out of that. Maybe you'll notice that someone who was grieving your loved one hasn't talked about it. It might be the first time they feel comfortable talking is at the holidays. And you're not responsible for that if you're the primary person who's lost someone, but you be on the lookout for some of the things that God will do during this season. He's incredibly kind and generous and loving, and he gives us a different eyesight from time to time to see what's going on around us in a different light. And so I would just encourage people to just look at things with a different lens if you can, to see what God is doing, because he is in the business of healing us and bringing beauty from the ashes. So you will definitely see it during the holiday season.
And if you're someone who is supporting a loved one in grief as they navigate the holidays, again, this can be as a friend, as a spouse, as a coworker, do not discount the power of just physically being there with someone. A lot of times I think that when we're in a support role, there's this tension to have the answers and to have the fix. There is not a fix for this.
Nope.
And that's where there is so much power when you have a friend, when you have a spouse who's willing to just enter into that gritty emotional place with you, right? The valley that we refer to.
Yep.
And I mean, again, if you are uncomfortable in that support role, some of the most impactful moments I had from friends, usually it came from the most unlikely of sources, right? It's not always the people that we think are going to be our closest, our biggest rah-rah rocks through this, but it's the people that are checking in. And there's not this expectation that you as the grieving person have to respond. Often we talk about the people who leave the voicemails that start with, "Hey, you don't have to call me back," right? That precursor. But I'm thinking about you. I know today is going to be really hard. How, you know, I just want you to know I'm praying for you, or I'm here if you want to watch a movie, or you want to take a walk, or if you want to talk about it. And I think that giving people that license to, if they want to share and share at their pace, just having that freedom without any strings attached, that's just so powerful to someone who is in a hurting place.
Absolutely. In fact, it's a good holiday practice to think about people that have lost people this year. You know, you see at the end of the year, every year, there's always a culmination of the people we've lost this year on the news. And it's good during the holidays to think back in the year and think about the people that people have lost, and to acknowledge it, again, like Meg said, in a way that doesn't require a response from the person, but just that's honoring their loss and just that they're thinking of it. That is so healing for people, and it's such a blessing, and it really does make a big difference. You don't have to be a grief expert. You don't have to be a grief helper, assistant person, just running around trying to help everyone. Those little remembrances are so powerful. I know it, and you're right, it is always the people that you don't expect. And it just refreshes your soul when someone asks and just takes the time to say, "Hey, I'm thinking about you." And again, no response needed. I just love you. That's a huge blessing.
You know, I remember times that people face to face that they would be like, "How are you doing?" And then I start to give the real answer, not just the "I'm fine," mm-hmm. but I am getting into the weeds of things that are hard, and I kind of see the uncomfortableness.
The glazed set, over. The glazed, looking at the watch. Oh,
it doesn't go as far as them scrolling their phone, but you can tell that they're either not comfortable mm-hmm. with what you're sharing, or they didn't think they were really going to be getting into the meat of it. And so, if someone is willing to be vulnerable, just let them go.
Let them go.
Just let them go. You know, we always smile at just some of the hard things. That's the PC way. Some of the hard things that people might say to you during the holidays that can be really hurtful in the moment, not only because they're insensitive, but because we're pretty emotionally charged, right? To put it lightly, heading into the holidays. And so part of not being blindsided around what to expect in the holidays, expect people to say some real
absurd.
There we go. Absurd
things.
No, I didn't say dumb. No dumb things. But maybe some absurd, not tactful, mm-hmm. not sensitive things. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I would say 99% of the time, it is not from a malicious place.
Never.
They don't know what
nope.
to say.
Right.
You know,
awkward.
They've never experienced grief, mm-hmm. or they just, you know, they lost a grandma that they saw like once when they were three. So they can't identify
yes.
maybe to a deep loss.
That's right.
And so they're just doing their best. And for us that are in that charged emotional place, it can be really easy to latch on to those of a sense of wrongedness, because you have a reason. It's a valid reason. It's someone who's in front of you that you can be frustrated with, as opposed to what we're really upset about, what we're really hurting right. about. And so just knowing going in, you're going to hear some things that aren't great.
Yep. It's going to be done. You just so, yes. And it's hard. And it's hard. And it's hard not to let it fester. But we are grace-giving people, and so we just, and it's, as you said, some people have never experienced deep loss. They just literally, they're just in that place, in that age group, where they've never experienced a deep loss. And And so there's, again, we always say no one teaches you how to do this. So they've just never learned that just simply presence, the presence of a person with very few words is usually the best remedy for someone. But in the event that you do hear something really weird and awkward, you know, just try to take it with a grain of salt and just an understanding that this person has just not been where you are. It's like if someone were talking about their trip to Italy and you've never been, you can only acknowledge so much like, oh, OK, that sounds great. OK, wonderful. You can't identify with it because you've never been there. And that's OK. Maybe you were because we're all going to get there one day. That's the unusual thing about grief is that at some point in our lives, we will be grieving. And at some point in our lives, we will be helping someone else grieve. So it's a learned life skill. It's not a one that we want to learn, but there is beauty in helping someone grieve. And so we're learning lessons along the way as we navigate our own loss and as we help others.
So let's talk about the actionable items, right? And again, knowledge is power on this. We want to do everything we can to mitigate the anxiety. And so much of the time anxiety is produced because there's just too much information coming in and we're having a hard time making a decision to make a plan. So our goal right now is to give you a little checklist, right? Of things just to consider. And again, if you can talk about these beforehand with whoever you're going to be celebrating the holidays with, even if you're going to be on your own, right? If that feels better to you, checking in with a friend around some of these things beforehand can really help you move through in the least disruptive way, I guess is the best way to put it. So when we're talking about the plan, right? I said at the beginning, sometimes you need to not have a plan, right? If you're someone who has a big holiday season and that in and of itself is just too much, like that's okay. So now we have a new plan and it's, we're just going to get through it. Or you may not acknowledge the holidays at all. So let's think about what are some of the practical things that typically come along with the holidays. You have the shopping and the cooking and the decorating, and you have all of these things that are part of what might have been your traditional holiday practices, your rituals, okay? And so thinking about, are these something that I want to partake in this year? Is it too painful to be putting up Christmas decorations? Or is that an opportunity for you to be surrounded by family or friends and have a bit of normalcy? And so again, there's no right or wrong way to execute on this. It's just, let's think about it beforehand. Let's put a little bit of time and energy beforehand.
Yep. And thinking about self-care, this is probably not the season, especially your first holiday after a deep loss, to have a lot of alcohol. This is probably a season not to, you know, anything in the extreme. There is a very strong tendency to want to numb the pain. And there's a lot of alcohol at parties and all the things and special Christmas cocktails. And so just thinking again, as we keep saying, just thinking ahead to, is this a season where I probably need to not have alcohol or take it really light? And again, giving people the heads up in advance so that they know. I mean, it, again, it's the communication piece of where are you? How are you feeling and what do you need? So if you go to a party and you need to feel completely comfortable to say, nope, I'm good. I'm just going to have a Diet Coke, water, whatever it is that you're, you know, instead of alcohol, don't feel badly about doing some extra self-care and maybe abstaining from some things that might not be the best idea this time of year.
And friends, I got to tell you, I definitely fell into that numbing category.
Me too.
I felt like at least my first 2 years around holiday season.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't even know if consciously I realized that there was a numbing component for me. But the more I drank, man, the harder those emotions came to the surface, unbidden, right? I just felt like they were living like right at the top of my chest, right? They're just right there. And for me, you know, especially in that second year of holidays, when I was drinking heavily, and for me, I'm like, this is just the holiday spirit. I'm in it, right? And I was having grief attacks left. Yep. I mean, I'm crying at Christmas parties. Like, it. And, I mean, you know, you talk about losing a rein on your emotions. And if you're already on the roller coaster, I mean, it will take you to places that are not only unproductive, but you're going to make it that much worse. And that is experience, friends, that I am talking about, where it just made everything harder. It made communicating harder. We talk about grief again as that big all-encompassing emotion. I couldn't even distinguish what I was feeling anymore because it was just all too much and it was unfiltered and it just wasn't pleasant. And frankly, it wasn't honoring to my sister's memory. And that was something that for me really helped prioritize and reprioritize what holidays looked like for her and in keeping her memory alive. She left behind a daughter who was 4 at the time of her death. And so really, you know, looking at how can we enhance the holidays for her, that for me became a really important purpose and focus of not only remembering her in small ways at everything we did, but also then looking at my niece and how can we make a better holiday season for her as well.
Yeah, really thinking about your loved one's values is really helpful in kind of discerning how do I go forward? What, you know, because we take for granted our loved one. We take for granted that they, like, my husband was an elite athlete. He was in great physical shape. He didn't abuse alcohol. He ate very healthily, you know. So it's honoring to think about your person, your lost loved one's values and honor them in this time. Their healthy values can be something that we carry forward. And it's a great, especially if your children have lost a parent, it's a great way to remember them. Hey, remember how Dad loved to work out? Let's be extra careful with our health. It's just so honoring to honor their values. And to prevent a lot of ugly crying and hangovers. And, on top of grief, the disorienting feelings of grief, that is just a big nightmare to avoid.
And so many of those traditions that come with the holiday season, just because they're painful, just because they're difficult to endure, doesn't mean that we need to throw them away entirely. It's okay to take a pause on those.
Yep.
And then
come back and see in a couple year, like next year, how do I feel this year? And reevaluate every year. How do I feel about that? If you had a really beautiful tradition, it will probably come back because it meant something to you. And as your grief settles and as the loss settles, you may find that you have the capacity to reestablish those traditions that you had in the past. I mean, my husband and I, he asked me to marry him Thanksgiving weekend. So Thanksgiving always brings that memory back. And now it's been enough time where it's a good memory. I look at the picture. I have a picture. I can see it right now in my mind of that, you know, fall weekend and what we were at my sister's lake house and all the details. And it's become a good memory for which I am thankful. So things do change over time. So throwing away all the holiday decor that your lost loved one maybe loved isn't probably a good idea. Just sit on that for a while and come back to it the next time around.
And part of really reinventing what the holidays look like and even traditions are thinking about what are your strengths going into this. If you are not someone who cooks, don't you be cooking.
This is not the year.
This is not, you better be
You're
looking
not doing
up.
The turkey this year.
There's too many easy options to fill that, whether it's catering, whether it's friends. You know, so many times in grief, people have a hard time reaching out to ask for something. You know, initially when there's loss, you have this flood of how can I help? What can I do? And then that slows down, right? And so picking up the phone and saying, hey, can you help me with this?
Absolutely. Can you pick this up? Can you deliver something for somebody? Just whatever. Let people help. They want to. They wanted to at the time of your immediate loss, and they always want to. They just don't know what to do. And so they stop asking because they're just not being deployed. So this is the perfect time. There's so many things that need to be done at the holidays, whether you need your snow shoveled or whether you need a kid picked up from a school event, whatever it is, just this is the time to ask. And people will be so grateful that you did because that, again, they're grieving your loved one too. They were their friend. They were their, you know, relative. They want to help. They want to do something for you. So let them. That's a gift to them.
And if you're someone who does not have a lot of family in the area, you know, I mentioned that most of my family is in Arizona. And so here in Ohio, it took time to build my community up. And so if you are someone where you experienced this loss and now you're on your own, there are people who want to host you for Thanksgiving, right?
Absolutely.
Like, don't feel like you have to just stay in that space, because sometimes, especially if you're suddenly on your own, you lost your partner or whoever you were living with, and then it's almost harder to be in your own space for the holiday. Get out. There's something to be said about just taking time elsewhere. It might feel different. I mean, those are things that in grief group, with all of the stories of individuals that we've worked with, I would say at least 30% of people on that first year, they don't want it at their house. They want to go somewhere else. They don't want to host. You know, somebody else is hosting. All they have to do is show up. And their ease of execution on the holidays can take you far.
The name
friends.
Of the game. That is the name of the game.
You're not washing dishes. Nope. You're not nope. just they just won't feed you. Let's go. Just come on over.
Come on over. Also, it's an opportunity to maybe your loved one didn't want to go to the theater, didn't want to go to the Nutcracker, but you did, and you just, you know, out of the way we negotiate and compromise in relationships, just said, okay, not a priority. Now's the time to revisit some of those things that you love and that means something to you that maybe your spouse didn't want to do, and to treat yourself to do those things. And that's a great way to kind of create a different atmosphere. Do some meaningful things that maybe you've been putting off, that they didn't enjoy, and get out and see what you've been missing all this time. There's some beautiful things to be done around the holidays that, especially if you're, you know, if you were, I was married to a big football player. He was not all that interested in doing, you know, going to high tea somewhere for a Christmas celebration. Grab a girlfriend. Grab somebody who would love to do something like that.
And I just want to acknowledge that I know that there are people that are listening to this that are like, Megs, I don't have people. I don't have someone who can host me. I don't have, you know, I'm new or I don't have community. I mean, I was in that position when we first moved here. I didn't know people here. And so I would have loved to pick up the phone and have somebody host me and not do all the things, but I didn't feel like I had people. And so I tell you what, there are churches that
That's
this
right.
is the season. They That's want right. to love on you. Even if this isn't your home church.
That's right.
There are people and it is their calling to love on you.
Yes.
Right. And God provides. You know, if whether you are a seasoned prayer warrior or you are not used to talking to God, it's just like talking to that friend. And I tell you what, that was something that really I feel like God provided for me, is that I didn't have a strong community. And I can remember in a grief attack, because sometimes that's when the best conversations with God happened, where I just remember blatantly saying, like, I need help. I need people. I need friends. Like, as an adult, how do you make friends? And that can be really challenging if you're not in the same place, or maybe you have some burned bridges or whatever the case is. And so I would just really encourage you to talk to God about it, because he knows better than us what we need, and he will provide.
Yes, he will. He will provide the right person at the right time for what you need. And that is the beauty of our faith, is that we are never alone. And that is the truth. Even in the darkest times, even when it feels like you have no one, you are not alone. The Lord will be close to you, particularly in a brokenhearted state. And as Meg said, sometimes the clearest revelation of God's voice comes in the dark and the quiet. And so in the holiday season, when it is dark and it is quiet, it is an amazing time to be intimate with the Lord, and to sit in the quiet and hear what he has to say and allow him to minister to your heart and to your soul. And it can be a beautiful, beautiful time of intimacy with God.
And part of making the plan for the holidays is not just the tactical plan of how, where am I going and how are things getting done, but Kelly mentioned the self-care piece as well, because we are taxed spiritually and physically and emotionally even more than just a typical grieving season. And so one, knowing that, but then two, what does that plan structure look like? Y'all, I cannot stress the importance of a nap and water. I mean, you know, there's especially when you feel like you're in that place where everything is taking a toll. You know, when we're in early grief, we just want to crawl under the covers. But a lot of us don't have that luxury. We have life. We have kids. We have work. Right. We have things, you know, maybe we're taking care of someone else. Maybe we're a caregiver to a parent. You can't just turn it off and go into the covers for 2 months until the holidays are over. And so how do you navigate some of that self-care when you're busy, when you can't do the things that you want to do from a self-care standpoint? So let's start from the emotional piece. What does self-care look like in creating that space for yourself?
Yeah. One of the best things for self-care depends on your personality, obviously. I love deep, long conversations with girlfriends. So to me, self-care looks like getting my calendar out and thinking about the people, like, who do I need? I need some time with Megs. I need some time with my friend Kate, who is just a delightful, comforting presence. Think about the people that are gonna, if you had a block of time, who would be the ideal person to fill that block of time with? And make a point now, as soon as you can, to get that person on your calendar, even if it's after the holidays, you know, the quiet of January. January is boring. Fill it up with people who will fill you up. And they want to be with you. They're not afraid of your grief. They love you. They want to be with you. And people are honored because there's kind of that grief bubble of like, oh, I shouldn't get in touch with her because she's grieving. So when you reach out of the grief bubble and you reach out to a friend, they are honored that of all the people that are trying to love you, you chose them to spend time with. And so think about what you need. We all have the friend who's bubbly and full of life and just makes you laugh no matter what you're going through. If that's what you need, great. Put them on your calendar. If you have the person who will just literally sit next to you like a Labrador and just let you just sit and what you can watch a sappy movie together and cry, whatever it is, whoever you need, get them on your calendar.
Yeah, with mental health, I think the power of journaling is, we can't sing enough praises about that journaling.
Get it out.
And I know a lot of you, they're like, I'm done with school. I'm not writing it out. Listen, this is a way to organize your thoughts because so much of the processing journey is organizing thoughts. We can't take everything on at once, but we can parse things out one by one. And there's something about putting pen to paper. I say this all the time whenever we're teaching grief groups, is that the tactile experience of writing, you know, whether you're starting with a prompt or not, let's say the prompt is, how do I feel about, you know, something just kind of innocuous about your grief and the holiday season. You will be amazed at what flows when you give yourself the time and space to really just empty the tanks, see what's going to come out. I mean, I can remember when I first started doing that practice, I would set a timer for 10 minutes. I'm like, I'm going to do a quick 10. And the first few rounds, I was doing other things. I was checking my phone during it. No, you got to put all of that away. If you have kids, wait till they're in bed or, you know, wait till you're not busy on the way to do something and just be. And I always ended up writing about things I didn't realize were top of mind. And it's such a great exercise to not only organize your thoughts, but you feel a release. Just like when you talk to somebody, whether you're a sharer or not, there is a physical release that happens. And so when you're able to put that down on paper, you take the big breath.
It's beautiful. And sometimes when you're writing to God, He will write back through what you're writing. I've had Him take over my pen many of time, and what came out was exactly what I needed. So kind and so loving and so perfect. And so, yes, just having that intimate space with pen, paper, thoughts, quiet, a cup of coffee, whatever you're in, a cozy blanket, whatever that comforting environment is to you. And if you've never done it, treat yourself to it. and see what the Lord will do. He will do amazing and surprising, beautiful things that way.
Yep. So let's talk about physical health. Mm. I think physical health is the number one thing that takes the most significant hit on the front end of grief. You're either sleeping a lot, not sleeping at all, you're not eating, or you're eating just junk food, and you're trying, again, we go back to the numbing piece, and it becomes this really tough terrain to navigate. And so part of preparing for the holidays is, how can I take care of myself physically, knowing that, yeah, there's going to be challenges. And again, I'm trying to help you endure well, because that's the thing. We're just trying
just
to
get through
we're
it.
Getting through it.
Yep.
And so let me just tell you, friends, that the physical piece, you cannot discount the power of three things. One, sleep quality. Two, movement, which we'll come back to here in a second, and sunlight. And I'm going to add kind of a bonus fourth is breathing, which we'll talk about in a second. So let's talk about sleeping. Sometimes we're getting enough, sometimes we're not getting any. And so as best you can, I want you to treat your sleep as sacred.
Absolutely.
And so many times this is where anxiety, or, you know, all of our worries start to come out, maybe even some panic attacks. But I want you to treat yourself like a small child, and I want you to give yourself a bedtime routine. I want you to put some structure around the ritual piece of sleeping. And so again, you hear it all the time, but not all of us do it. Put those phones away, put that TV away. It can be so tempting to just have the TV on in the background. You're not alone. It's someone there. It's just kind of this background noise for you. But the power of taking the screens away, put on that calm music. If you're not someone who listens to instrumental music, great time to start. Put on that classic, you know, go on Apple Music, put on the top classical music. It changes your brain chemistry.
That's right.
I have a brain health background. And part of understanding the neuroplasticity, as Kelly and I were just talking about, the renewing of your mind,
absolutely,
right? This grief transforms us not only physically and spiritually, but emotionally as well. And so these three pillars really work together. And so when you give yourself that bedtime routine of taking the screens away, calm music, low lighting, these are all things that are preparing your body for a night's sleep. Now, you might do those things and still lay there, okay?
Yep.
But how do we then progress in our sleep? We want to help take away that fight or flight response in your body. And this happens whenever we have anxiety, right? So what happens is we have a surge in our heart rate. We have all of the different mechanisms of a fight or flight, right? You might be getting flushed. You might, you know, all of these different things are happening. And so a lot of times whenever you do breath work, they take practice, right? You have to do maybe like a gratitude journal or some long extended yoga breathing. And all of those things are really powerful and they have value. But I want to give you a physiological tool that you can implement today. And so this is from Dr. Huberman's lab. He's a neuroscientist out of, I believe it's Stanford, and he has some really great resources with this. But the biggest thing that I want you to do is when you're laying there, whether you wake up and you have a hard time getting back to sleep, or going to sleep in the first place, or even just having a panic attack, or you're feeling overwhelmed, it's a moment of stress somewhere in your life. What I want you to do is a single inhale through the nose, pause, take a second inhale through the nose. So you're just sneaking in some more air, and then it's a full exhale through the mouth. So inhale through the nose, pause, second inhale through the nose, and then a full exhale. And so when I say a full exhale, you are pushing all of that air out. And so what's happening is that that physiological response that you're having in that fight or flight moment, you are able to empty the tank, specifically the carbon dioxide that's building up in your bloodstream. And so just within two or three of those, you're able to drop your heart rate up to 30%. It's amazing what can happen when you implement this. And it's not something that you need to practice. It's inhale through the nose, pause, second inhale through the nose, full exhale through the mouth, do two to three of them, and we're lowering our heart rate.
Yeah. Which, because our brain is an amazing, God has created our brain to be amazing and powerful, but it's really on alert all the time. And so we don't need that all the time. And so this is an incredibly powerful way to let all of those alert systems decrease so that we can get deep sleep. Yeah, the classical music, there's a mathematic rhythm to classical music, which our brain aligns to, and it brings calm and it brings order and it brings peace. Yeah, so all of the good sleep techniques are really important this time of year. And some people, I think, in grief are worried, I'm sleeping too much, I'm sleeping all the time. I don't know if there's enough sleep sometimes. I don't think that's a big concern. If you're getting deep sleep, go for it. Your body needs it. Your body is going to, you know, it's going to regulate after a while. But I think most people probably have a harder time sleeping than sleeping too much. So, yeah, that the breathing techniques are so, so important. And again, especially if you've had spouse loss, you're going to have to address your sleeping situation. It may be too painful to go back to the bed that you shared with your spouse. You're going to have to create this is a time, if you're ready to make that change, this is a good time to make it so that you're investing in your sleep. And making a comfortable place for yourself. If you're not ready to go back to that bed, then find a bed in your home that for now can be your nest and really treat yourself to make it special and make it as comfortable as possible, quiet as possible, and just really invest in yourself.
Yep. And what about movement, right? Mm-hmm, yeah. So again, when you're running on fumes, working out might feel like it's counterintuitive. Like, I don't have the energy for it. But even if it's a 10-minute walk.
Absolutely.
And it's dual purpose at that point, right? You are getting not only the movement piece, which changes your brain chemistry, but also sunlight. And even if it's the winter, right? There's sun that's getting through those clouds.
Ambient light is still available. Your body will find the vitamin D that it needs. Just get out there. And the weight gain that can happen because we feel lethargic, it just makes everything harder. And this is just a time to just remember, you know, we all know what happens when our activity decreases. The pounds go on, unfortunately. And it's just another thing that you don't want to have to deal with on top of grieving. And eating as best quality foods as you can. And again, maybe this is an opportunity where maybe your spouse didn't care about things like that, but you did, or maybe you're going to be developing different eating patterns, especially if you've lost a spouse. And so now might be the time to start thinking about, how do I want to eat? Were we eating a little bit off of a healthy plan because, my husband loved ice cream. There was always ice cream in the house. He was a big guy. He could eat a lot. I felt like we were eating kind of bigger meals than maybe I would have wanted to. And so this is the time to kind of look at those things and put some healthy practices in place if you weren't. And to modify things that benefit the lifestyle that you're going to lead going forward.
Yeah, and so many of those highly processed foods, which are great in the moment, man, they're just going to make the emotional piece even harder to navigate. And
the
so again,
our
numbing looks different from person to person. And as tempting as that is, you know, I'm not saying that you need to go on an all celery diet here, but you know, again, it's awareness. It's bringing awareness to it and trying to navigate as best we can. So let's move on in terms of, again, we're anticipating now some of the physical pieces. What are the spiritual pieces look like?
The holidays are a beautiful time for gratitude. They are in any circumstance, but they certainly can even be more heightened in a time where you're emotionally sensitive, because God is always present, right? Even though we are confused a lot of time in grief, we might be a little bit angry, He will continue to shine His light on the beauty in our lives and the good things that he has done and the good things that are coming, that are still going to go on in our lives, especially if we're raising children. There are going to be beautiful moments. And so, again, going back to and the wonder of the holidays, there's just something special about the lights and the the feeling that people are a little extra kind to each other during the holidays. A lot of times you can just, because you're so sensitive already in grief, you might be start to see things with a very, very beautiful lens that's different. So I would just encourage that again. To seek God while he can be found, because he can always be found, especially when your spiritual senses are heightened because your emotions are heightened. You are probably looking for him. Your heart is looking for him. If you are a believer, your heart is searching for him desperately, and he will be found, probably in amazing and beautiful and different ways than you can imagine. So keeping our eyes open and just allow, if you have to cry, great. He loves that. He wants to be close to you. All emotions are all doable for him. He wants all of them.
He's the ultimate healer, friends. Like, I tried to heal on my own by not acknowledging the grief and taking the I'm fine, I'm strong, I'm gonna power through this, and that just implodes, right? So yeah. So whether you have a close relationship with him or not, like, he is that prescription for grief, and he's got real big shoulders. Yep. So, part of inviting him into that grief process is you can say what you need to say. Hey, I'm real angry. This is not the Christmas that I wanted.
That's right.
We can bring those hard conversations to him, and he's going to meet us in that hard place. And there is so much peace to be had, more than any planning and any bedtime routine and any sitting in it with a friend, mm-hmm. is that God will meet us in a place that you cannot even imagine, and he will dole out comfort in a time that you think that there is no comfort to be had. There is hope in the midst of this pain, in the midst of this grief.
Because he is the ultimate hope. I mean, if we think about, Jesus is the awaited one, right? For centuries, people were waiting for the Messiah. That longing for hope. And when the hope comes, there's nothing more beautiful. And light will come. You will begin to heal. You will begin to feel love again. You will begin to feel light again. And he is the giver of every good gift. And so seeking him in this special time is just, there's an opportunity for intimacy in a grieving state during the holidays that is just very raw and it's very real. And he loves that. He loves it. Our defenses are down. And many times we think, God, I don't have anything else but you. And that opportunity is just, there's nothing like it.
And whatever your story, whatever your loss, we don't know the ins and outs of it, of your unique journey. But man, God does.
He does.
He does. And he will show up for you if you give him an opportunity. In the midst of just unbearable pain sometimes, he will redeem that. And it might be in small ways in the holidays. It might be in big ways that you can't even imagine yet. And so you don't have to have the answers. You just have to have a willingness to bring it to God.
Yep. Take the time.
Holidays are just so, they're just so big, right? There's a lot of components to it. And if you're listening to this and you're like, I can't do any of those things. I can't make a plan. Listen, you put this on pause and you come back to this when you can. Get that little notebook out. And maybe it's just writing two things, right? What's one plan that I can make this holiday? What's one way that I can take better care of myself?
That's it.
Right? It doesn't have to be, oh my gosh, now I have 20 things.
No spreadsheets.
20 things I got to do.
Don't make a spreadsheet.
And this and that. But you are not alone in this pain. And there are so many people who get it. And I think for so long, because I didn't talk about my grief, I didn't talk about my sister, I didn't realize that, oh my gosh, this is common. What I'm feeling is normal. This is what grief is like. And it was only when I was around other people who had experienced deep loss that I actually felt more of a freedom to just exist in that place of I'm not okay. And that's, you know, really the hope I have for you this season is that you are vulnerable enough to share with someone or to find a grief group or join one of Crossroads, mm-hmm. whether it's online or in person. And there are people who get it to where you can just show up and say, I'm a mess.
Yep.
And they, yeah.
They'll say, come over and sit by me.
There is the nod of approval because they just get it. And you are excused from having to rationalize and describe and kind of bring somebody in who just has no knowledge of it. You know, like Kelly said, it's the trip to Italy, except this is the trip none of us wanted to be. This is Italy sounds more fun, I'm sure.
Yes.
It's probably nicer this time of year also. Yep.
But here we are.
Here we are in this club that nobody wants to be in. And we use that terminology a lot because that's what it is. And there are people in this club you don't even know about.
It's a very large club.
You got neighbors. You got coworkers. There are people who are hurting. And if you are brave enough to mention the hard place that you are in, you will be amazed in the community that comes around you. And if you don't have community, seek it out because there are grief groups and there are things online and in person and there are churches that want
to help
and to bless you.
Amen.
I know that so much of the holidays we dread. And really, I feel like my prayer for you is that you took a first step in listening to this podcast, right? You want to do what you can to navigate grief. And for all the stories that we showcase and that we highlight and really show the ways that God redeems our pain, not only in our lives, but in the people that we talk to, we still want to have more resources for you. So if you have questions, if you have things that you want us to talk about, please send them our way. We actually have a place that you can submit all of your questions. It's Surviving Grief. That's with two G's, survivinggrief@crossroads.net. Survivinggrief@crossroads.net. Send them in.
Yep.
We want to help meet you where you're at. Go ahead, Kelly.
We'll answer them. We'll take your questions and we'll answer all your questions. So if there's anything that you want to know as you're navigating this journey, email us. We'll be happy to tackle it.
So lastly, one thing that we always talk about is what does good grief look like in the midst of all of our stories? So Kelly, what does good grief look like in the midst of the holidays?
Good grief looks like honoring God and yourself. And just, I think, keeping your eye on the two of you and whatever happens for everyone else, they will be fine.
Amen. Thanks for joining us. And we wish you a healthy, happy, hopeful.
Yes.
Ooh, that's a lot of H's on a strong point. That's a lot of H's, but a holiday season. And you're not alone.
Yep.
That's the biggest thing. And we're praying for you.
Amen.
Surviving Grief is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio. If you'd like to connect or share your own story, reach out to us at podcasts@crossroads.net. That's podcasts with an S at crossroads.net. We'll see you next time.